Welcome to Sports Business Secrets. I'm your host, Kevin Tarka. This podcast is specifically designed to share secrets from experts in the sports business world to help you along your own path to success in this industry. Each episode is packed with lessons and insights that never expire. You'll hear from general managers of professional teams to CEOs of sports tech companies to agents, coaches, players, and everything in between. I invite you to join me in real time on my personal journey of representing players and coaches, traveling the world, and always finding a way to battle through obstacles in this competitive industry. This episode is brought to you by Ballogy. A mobile app created by coaches for coaches, the Ballogy mobile app makes it easy for you to effectively evaluate, manage, and track overall skill development for your team. This is not just another software. It's a solution to help you scale your program expectations and principles in less time. The Ballogy app is internationally available and used by some of the top programs in the U.S. Go to Ballogy.com, that's Ballogy.com for more information. Happy Thursday, my friends. Need to jump on here this afternoon and give a good old-fashioned rant. I was on some calls this morning with coaches and then scrolling through Twitter and then reading the news about this NCAA partnership with a private company for NIL services, and just felt the need to chat about a few things and address a couple of topics and simply just kind of vent and talk about some of the updates from my perspective about NIL. So here are a few notes that I want to touch on. To begin, obviously, there's a lot of bad press about, you know, your average fan saying NIL is ruining college sports. And so I just wanted to address that first. Like, you could be mad about the rapidly changing landscape of college sports if you want to. But before you start publicly berating what's happening with NIL, please, I encourage you to take a moment to really understand the situation. First, for those of you who say, oh, well, college athletes aren't loyal, like there's no loyalty anymore. If somebody came to you and said, sir or ma'am, you could double your salary if you took a job at a new company, what would you do? It's a serious question. It could be rhetorical if you'd like. Think about it. Be honest. What would you do? Right? What if a company came to you and said, you could also take a new role with more impact, maybe a vice president title. Maybe you were an account executive somewhere and your name was tied, you know, you've been working your butt off. Your name was tied to a few new big contracts in the news, and a new company came to you and said, hey, look, we see your value. Like, we need someone to run sales for our branch over here on the East Coast. And we have a director of sales position that we want you to step up into. What would you do? And I don't think enough people think about that. Like, typically, in my experience, generally speaking, it's non-former athletes that are all upset about the new change in the landscape and saying there's, you know, they shouldn't be paid this much, they shouldn't be paid, there's no loyalty. But I just encourage you, obviously, because I'm a little bit biased, since I want to protect athletes and I want to encourage a free and open market. So I'm typically on that side, although I can argue and see both sides, and there are issues that we need to continue to fix. But the point is, just really think about being a student athlete and everything that comes with it, and ask yourself those questions. That's first and foremost. secondly, for the people who say, well, they're getting overpaid, like, it's crazy. Do I agree that that some of the NIL packages or some of the payments are technically, like, I guess you could subjectively call it, objectively call it absurd. Yeah, sure. Like, getting paid zero a couple of years ago to getting paid $1 million or $200,000 or $50,000 or anywhere in between. Yeah, that it's crazy to think about, but it's the reality, right? What is the definition of value? What's the definition of price? Well, on the open market, the price for a specific good or service is determined by the relationship between supply and demand. At any given point, I always make fun of myself and say my finance degree makes me sound smarter than I am, but I know basic economics and basic finance, right? price is the amount of payment that is expected or given by one party to another in return for something. Price is ultimately the value someone is willing and able to pay. So if a donor says, I care this much about my team winning, that I'm willing to support with a $1 million check to retain or recruit or secure the top athletes to potentially make my team the best. Well, guess what? Guess what it's worth? That $1 million check. That's the reality. So, you know, it might not obviously be apples to apples, right? The analogy is it's apple to oranges here because you could talk about different sub markets, but let's take a painting. Let's take any product or service. Take a painting. What's the value of a painting? Well, I don't really know much about the market of art and paintings, but I could tell you one thing for sure. If a painting by Jean-Michel Basquiat is up for auction, that freaking thing is going to sell for a ton of money. Why? Because a lot of people want it. The demand is huge. This lady wants it in her museum. This guy wants it in his living room. That person wants to buy it only to resell it. Again, we're talking about a painting versus, you know, a human here in college athletics. And ultimately, yes, it's their assets. There's demand, there's supply. The price is what someone is willing to pay. And third, now, the people that say, well, colleges aren't going to make any money anymore, or all that money should be going to colleges, or should be paying for other things, or colleges, they're just, you know, it's going to be a shift of dollars to the students and it's going to ruin it. I think that's bullshit. If colleges were smart, they would see this as a giant win-win and lean into leveraging and supporting their student athletes. You know, and all of the short and long-term benefits that it provides everyone, right? If you support a top-ranked recruit coming to your school, allowing them to tap into their true market value, then the team gets better. Then you get more media attention. You get more love from the community. In turn, you sell more tickets. That's money. In turn, you create a great atmosphere. In turn, you make it easier for home field advantage, home court advantage. You win more games. You win more games, you make make the NCAA tournament. Then you upgrade your broadcast deal. Then you sell more merchandise. Then you make it to the Final Four. Then you get millions of dollars from the NCAA distributions. Right? Then you get millions and millions of dollars from the new students around the world saying, I want to be a student at that school because I love the culture there. I want to go support those athletes, right? Because they pay tuition for the years to come. So, you know, you really have to think of all the pieces here. And obviously the frustration is there's so many variables that change so quickly that it is hard and frustrating sometimes to even understand the impact that this simple change in allowing athletes to monetize their name, image, and likeness has made, right? Again, for the example that I was just talking about, it's not going to happen for every single school. And the price of a top-ranked recruit versus a bottom-ranked recruit in the top 100 is going to be vastly different. That's the reality. But you take Iowa women's basketball just as an example, of course, outlier. But Iowa women's basketball experienced a 125% increase in operating revenue in the 2022-2023 fiscal year, right? That was according to the NCAA financial report. Ticket revenue nearly doubled between 2021-2022 season and 2022-2023 season, from about $750,000 to $1.4 million. Now, that's just reported numbers that I quickly looked up from the past couple seasons, let alone this year from the craziness and the exponential growth of women's basketball. Iowa has had significant increases in NCAA distribution, obviously, like I mentioned, because of the NCAA runs. Don't forget, conferences get a check from the NCAA every time a school from that conference makes the tournament and continues to advance. They've had philanthropic and donor donations to the school, not just athletics, to the school as well, an increase in that, increase in media rights, increase in sponsorships, increase in other revenue sources. So it's, game sellouts, tickets, like it's all tied together. Now, again, is that every school? Absolutely not. There's a large gap between the Iowas of the world, the Alabamas of the world, the UNCs and Dukes of the world, and then your mid-majors and your low-majors, no question, but this is life. This is the free market. This is how small mom-and-pop shops grow and get acquired by big companies. They find a way. This is how a company selling books from a garage turns into Amazon. They find a way to create value. Life is not always fair. And I think that's one of the issues with a lot of people is that, you know, now it's kind of unfair because you have a donor base that's just writing checks and now it's just unequal recruiting. And yeah, I mean, this is life. There's a lot of variables to this that make it difficult. But we need to embrace it. Right. And instead of complaining, arguing, crying, whatever you're doing, it's time to put all of our heads together and identify the issues that come with these changes and try to find solutions and embrace this massive change. What are some of those, in quotes, issues or problems or changes? Well, there's a couple of them that I'll talk about now. There's obviously many, but financial stability of the market. Obviously, a lot of the NIL, in quotes, market is... it's driven by donors, right? If a donor pays $100,000 to a collective, obviously to recruit a certain athlete, or whether they want a specific athlete that they're hoping to get, or they just make a big donation and write a check and they want to get the best athlete, it's not a sustainable model, right? It's like, because it is a donation, it's a contribution to recruit. Let's just call a spade, right? So let's just say you have a big collective and you ask a couple of donors to donate a significant amount of money, and they write a check for $100,000 or $500,000 or $50,000. I mean, that's not pocket change, right? So if they do that, and then in turn that next season, you have the team has a 500 season and they don't make the NCAA tournament. The question is, well, will they pay again? Will they contribute that much money again? Because what are they paying for, right? They're paying for, the hope that they can have an impact and be part of the mix of recruiting to make their school better to win. That's what they're paying for. And in the past, there were some tax write-offs that's obviously no longer allowed. So like, that's not like, people want to be involved. People want to see their school win for one reason or another. So that's one thing, financial stability of the market. And then you have roster stability. Obviously, this has become a huge issue with the transfer portal, with thousands of names in the transfer portal. It's become free agency, short-term craziness for sure. So how do we mitigate some of this short-term thinking? How do we help schools retain their talent if they want to? Well, there's a couple of different ideas that have already been teased around and that I think could help. One of those being multi-year deals. And then another being buyouts. And it's already starting to happen in like NIL or marketing contracts where a student will get a portion of the money up front and then they'll kind of spread that out over the year. You hear of some that are obviously, it's case by case, but some that are rightfully so, some that are as a representative or an agent or somebody guiding a student athlete, I would say, well, that's sketchy. That really that's very risky for you to put all of that money on the back end. And, if something happens and you don't get any of it, but there are ways to do, spread out that money where, it's technically not tied for pay to play. But yeah, it's also kind of allowing it to be mutually beneficial and allowing the schools to try to mitigate some of that short-term craziness of free agency. I think in terms of buyouts, like I think eventually, and it's going to be tough to do before athletes are employees, which I think eventually that's what it's going to lead to. But we just need buyouts, straight up buyouts in playing specific contracts, right? Not skirting along the issues and pretending like it's not related to pay for play, like it is, but saying, okay, well, If an athlete's getting $100,000 to play at a school and that athlete wants to leave after year one, then that's fine. They should have the right to do that. But if they're leaving because they're going to get $250,000 at a higher school, well, then a percentage of that new contract should go back to the school. So, just like a pro contract, because that's in reality what we've gotten to, then everybody wins. Like that's a free market. Right. So having buyouts tied to certain years or multi-year contracts is definitely a way to at least mitigate that craziness and put some guardrails for stability. Then you have financial literacy. So something that obviously has been talked about forever and something I quite honestly, like get frustrated at a little bit myself, partially because You know, there's a lot of it that I was never taught and I'm not an expert on, right? We didn't learn that in high school or, you know, even in college. And I have a finance degree. It's like some of these small business, entrepreneurial, real life business situations about taxes and write-offs and loopholes and LLCs. Like I figured out some of that along the way because I'm a, you know, I founded a company and I am, you know, in quotes, an entrepreneur, right? I just had to figure that out, but there's still a lot I don't know. So can you imagine somebody that started a company 7 years ago and had figured out a lot along the way in real life? What I know versus what I wish I knew now as a college athlete, like college athletes, most of them aren't exposed to that. So how do we actually teach these young adults how to act accordingly? Because they are businesses, they are making a lot of money. Right. You know, everybody's been calling for them for athletes to make money over the past several years. Well, now they are. They're making 50,000 or 20,000 or 120 or a million. Now, how do they pay taxes? How do they open LLCs? How do they understand what they can write off, what they can donate, how to set themselves up for the future? Because again, let's not pretend that high major athletes are not making life-changing money. They are. They really are. You're talking about the top level, top 1%, top 5%. Even any student athlete that's making six figures, or not even, doesn't have to be six figures. Like this is a huge change from where we were. So how do we not just say, hey, here's this online course if you want to, but how do we act? And I don't want to say require, because what's the saying? You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make a horse drink. But you know, how do we coach along student athletes to understand all of this stuff that I just mentioned? Another main topic is technology and transparency. These could be separate, but they're also kind of together. It's like right now there's absolutely zero transparency. One of the reasons that this is such chaos is because there's no source of validity. There's no source of truth right now. There's Twitter. There's a couple of blogs. There's some websites that, and some of these tweets and people writing articles and actually running their websites and spreadsheets. They do a great job, but you know, where is an actual open sourced or public transparent home, right? For platform for student athletes to educate themselves, for coaching staffs to understand the market, for donors and brand partners, potential brand partners to understand the market value. There's none of that. So there should be. We can use technology and transparency to make this a better process, I think. Now again, I most of this little rant is based on a little bit of biased support for student athletes, and because I was a student athlete, and because I represent players, and because I'm an advocate for players, but I also have a lot of thoughts on how to, like, I see both sides, how to protect the universities, because there is a way for everyone to win. There is, because there's enough money for everyone to win, that's for sure. It's just never been properly shared or shared equally had guidelines for people to understand how to share that. But I do want to add, I'm not saying, I don't agree that every single kid in the transfer portal should be in the transfer portal. I still support the statement, and I say it a lot, the grass is not always greener on the other side. Sometimes it is, but it's not always. And I've told this to a few players this week and a couple of high school coaches that have, you know, some high-level recruits. It's like, think long-term. Obviously, there's going to be situations. Okay, if you can double your income, if you can provide for your family, if you take advantage of it, this window's small. But if you're only doing it for that reason, think about NBA. Like, let's just take basketball, for example, and you want to get to the highest level, you want to play in the NBA. NBA teams and teams abroad will look at careers, obviously understand how good you are and your stats and analyze that stuff and your character. But part of that process is say, look, here's this player's profile. Why did you transfer this year? Or why did you go to four schools? And maybe there's a great answer. Sometimes there are. Again, I can provide for my family. Would you turn down $100,000? Nope. Okay, great. Great answer. Boom. On to the next. Maybe it's the coach got fired. Maybe it wasn't the right fit. Maybe they wanted to, move closer to family, or they had an injury, whatever. A lot of opportunities. But the moment that teams find out that you transferred because you weren't getting the proper minutes that you had hoped, or you found out that a recruit is coming in that's in your position, or anything related to shying away from competition or adversity, I'm not saying they're not going to offer you a contract or they're not going to draft you. It's simply saying it is duly noted in the process when you are being analyzed. It is. Is that worth going to sign somewhere to make $1 million for 1 year? Yeah. I mean, probably, like, you know, I would probably do that, you know, say, I don't care what a team thinks about me. I need to go get $1 million because the window's small. I might get injured. Absolutely. That's part of the process. Anyways, I have been on a little bit longer rant than I had hoped. I wanted to just kind of get a couple of topics off, but for usual, this is just like an open conversation. I would love to continue this conversation with whoever's listening. You can respond to the tweet. You can send me an email. You can quote the tweet. You can tell me I'm an idiot. You can argue the other side. You can support this. You can retweet it, whatever. This is why I have the podcast, and this is why I carve out some time to put these crazy thoughts in my brain onto paper, and sometimes simply just speaking into a microphone. So that's enough for today. I need a break. Definitely need another coffee. need some water too, because I'm starting to lose my voice after that rant. But I appreciate you tuning in, and we'll see you back here tomorrow. Thanks again for listening, my friends. If you enjoyed the episode, or if it brought you any value at all, it would mean the world to me if you could give it a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. If you share it on social media, make sure you tag me at Kevin Tarka. If there are any topics that you want me to dive into, or any guests you'd love for me to have on the show, just shoot me a message and I will do my best to make it happen. Have an amazing day, and hope to see you back here soon.